Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll take a deep dive into the new Google Pixel devices and ask if the Google Pixel 9 is the best phone on the market. We'll chat with Refurbed about the second-hand market in Ireland, and as ever, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can do so at any stage. Email techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. Later in the show, we're going to take a look at Elon Musk's robo-taxi and his vision for humanoid robots in the home. But let's start with Google Pixel, and I'm delighted to say that John Riley of TheEffect.net is with me once again. John, how are you?
Great, Jess. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's been a while since you have been on, and I think one of the last times we spoke, we were previewing the new Google devices. They were on their way to us, and we had both said that we were super excited to try them out. It's been a few weeks now, and I can tell you that I am officially out of the world of Apple. I'm no longer an iPhone user. I'm no longer an Apple Watch user. That's as big a testimony, I suppose, as I could give to the new Google devices. What have you made of them?
I've never really been an iPhone iOS device user myself, but I've always been an Android person. And so I was always eagerly awaiting these new Pixel devices. And I think, as you said, the last time we were chatting, we mainly covered like the main, not the main handsets. So there was like three main handsets that they were bringing to the market. And I'd previously been using the Pixel 8 Pro. So I was really excited for this new Pixel 9 Pro, the XL model, which is basically kind of somewhat trying to replicate Apple's offerings and having a more general, smaller, for want of a better term, device, and then these XL or Max models that Apple and Pixel have gone with, or Google have gone with, for the larger screened phones that people are getting more and more used to. So yeah, I've shifted on up to the Pixel 9 Pro XL, which is actually just the same size as last year's 8 Pro, but the moniker then gives the ability to go with just a Pixel 9 Pro, which is like a smaller version of the XL model, but has all the bells and whistles. So they've been crying out, or a lot of the tech enthusiasts or the tech landscape have been crying out for a phone that does it all, as big as a brick, basically. Yeah. So you've got both options there. And then really just the entry-level Pixel 9 is for the people that really aren't that bothered with having the cutting-edge tech, but a phone that is more than really for most people.
Yeah, so the lineup is incredibly impressive. As you said, they're trying to cater to everybody. We also have the foldable phone, which we'll talk about in a quick second. But let's focus on the three main Pixel devices themselves. Because one of the big selling points of these phones, as indeed with the new Apple phone, is the AI and the capability and the power inside of them. So you've mentioned that you're using the Pro XL. Talk us through what makes this one different from the previous iteration.
Yeah, so really with the XL model, it's all in on Gemini, which is basically, if your listeners are aware, is Google's kind of offering or consumer-focused offering for AI implementation across their devices. So this is kind of somewhat trying to replace Google's Assistant, which everyone would be aware of. I'm afraid now to say it too loudly because I have enough of those speakers lying around the house here. But the Gemini is being built in kind of from the ground up for this device. They've got the new Tensor G4 processor, and it's got a hell of a lot of more RAM, especially these Pro models of 16 gigabytes of RAM, which is probably more than most people's laptops. More than most people's laptops. So it's an obnoxious amount of RAM that really helps to keep things sailing along in the background quite smoothly. And then, as I mentioned, is kind of implemented across the phone. It can be used to help summarize voice recordings. You can go in and manipulate images even more aggressively and kind of tweak things around and change backgrounds completely. Use AI to generate things that aren't even there. That's a whole different kind of ethical kettle of fish. But yeah, I've been absolutely loving playing with it. They even have their kind of, what would you call it? Their voice assistant on steroids. It's called Gemini Live. And it's kind of a step up where you can have this like very, very natural free flowing conversation with this Gemini assistant. You can select the voice and then away you go. And I've been doing it for the last number of weeks, and I'm kind of still taken aback by how impressive it is at just its speed and its kind of intuitiveness, in terms of understanding what I'm trying to get from it, and just asking it questions about theology and food and culture and stuff that you wouldn't be able to really Google without going down infinite rabbit holes. So just being able to like literally talk to Google and have it kind of go off and do the homework for you and just come back to you pretty instantaneously with an answer, it's quite something, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, I always kind of come at these things with a bit of an arched eyebrow going, yes, it's cool, but how useful is it and how practical is it and how much am I actually going to use it? And like you, you know, I've been trying to play around with it and I've been trying to set its limitations. But I've also then, you know, in the last, say, 2 weeks, reached for it and used it because it works. The speech recognition is fantastic. The speed, as you alluded to, is great. And even small things, like when I am doing my interviews, and this is probably, I'm one of the few people in the country that would use this, but when I'm recording interviews, sometimes, and this is inside baseball, I need to revoice something. So that means to re-record my question. It could be that I was off mic or it wasn't recording or something like that. And so what I've started doing is using the recorder on my phone, so on the Google Pixel 9, and it's live transcribing both my end of the conversation and your end of the conversation. And the transcript is pretty flawless, so that when it comes to me revoicing my interview or whatever it needs to do, it is so easy in comparison to the way it was back in the day, which was you'd listen back and you'd transcribe it yourself. The accuracy has blown me away, more so than pretty much any other feature.
Yeah, no, I think, and they've actually been kind of leading that charge for quite a while now, but it's just been supercharged with the advances they've made in their kind of AI models. Like, they were kind of well known for the last two or three generations for their voice recorder and its kind of voice to speech or voice to text transcription capabilities, but now it's just another level. And to your point, you can not only just obviously get incredibly good or accurately transcribed recordings, you now can get summaries of those recordings to go, what did we cover in that interview, or, you know, what were the main points? Like, it'll divide the speakers up so you can kind of see as you look back who was speaking when. There'll be different color coded sections so you know who was speaking when. All that, I know it's a niche offering, for want of a, you know, for a certain kind of demographic, but when it's used like people like you and you're in the media industry and kind of interviews and at the drop of a hat, I can only imagine the incredible benefits it can bring, and just the speed and efficiency that it just adds to your kind of workflow.
Yeah, I think it for me has been a grounding in the day-to-day applications of this incredible AI that we're hearing so much about. Now, I know that there are ethical questions for businesses about the implementation and how and when and why they use it, but for me, the point that you just made there of summarizing a meeting, like, that will be, when businesses start to use this properly, I think it will be a game changer. And to have it in the back pocket of your jeans, ready to be deployed at the drop of a hat, it's proper innovation. And I suppose when Apple is going through its, I suppose, turbulent time of trying to figure out if and when its Apple Intelligence will launch in Europe, Google really does have an advantage here, doesn't it?
Yeah, they really were quick off the mark, or kind of had the groundwork put in that this is their own offering. We can see with Apple's implementation when it comes to their devices, you know, in America initially, and as you said, when it rolled out here in Ireland and Europe, that they're kind of being propped up for, you know, by ChatGPT's capabilities. So the fact that Google has its own smarts, is powering the device with their kind of AI focused processors and just implementing it across all the kind of services most of your listeners will be using. If it's Gmail, if it's Google Docs, if it's YouTube even, you can pop it into this Gemini app and go summarize this video. And rather than spending 25 minutes watching a video, it'll grab all the content from the audio or the closed captions or the subtitles, and it'll just give you a little summary. So that is just the time and effort you're going to kind of save from these little kind of quality of life additions or kind of bonus additions to AI in your life is really something you can't ignore, to be honest.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The other thing, the Radio Awards were on last Friday, and if you follow me on Instagram, you'll have seen 10,000 photographs. But it was funny, on the night, I was taking the majority of the photos, and every single person that I took the photo for was like, oh my God, your camera is insane. And it wasn't because it was airbrushing the photographs, but it was capturing the light, it was capturing the colours, the detail. It is a level above even the previous phone that I was using, which was the 15 Pro Max, the iPhone 15 Pro Max. It's just in a league of its own, in my opinion, when it comes to cameras on smartphones that are just point and shoot. There's no messing around with any settings or anything like that.
No, exactly. And again, they've been leading the charge for quite some time. I think initially, way back when it came on the scene, people were kind of wondering how Google were going to approach this and were they going to be just an incredibly search-focused device that wouldn't, you know, and then the camera would just be an add-on. But they really kind of doubled down from the very get-go with the cameras on their Pixel phones to say, we can really use our computational power and our AI smarts from the very beginning or the very first device to show what can be captured on a smartphone. And we're now, 9 generations in, basically. And these phones are capturing some of the best photos you can get on any smartphone. So credit is definitely due there. Like, as you said, the usability, the idiot-proofness of it, just pop it out of your phone. Even the fact that they just use the improved front-facing camera on these Pro models, that how wide that camera lens is. I don't know if you've noticed that when you're holding it out at arm's length, like, I don't think many other phones can get such a wide selfie, basically. And when I've shown people, they don't really, it's only when you put them side by side with maybe an iPhone device or maybe a more run-of-the-mill mid-tier device that you see what you're getting when you go for these top-tier devices. And again, just being able to capture the moment in all its breadth and whatever it may be, it really just shows why it's worth kind of going up to these upper levels. Because at the end of the day, you know, the Pro and the Pro XL models, they have creeped up in price too. So you're looking at the Pro model is coming in at €1,119, and then you're jumping up to the XL, which is that bigger handset that I use. That's €1,219, or, you know, that's not cheap at all. So you got to be really kind of willing to commit to that investment, but make sure you're going to get the benefit out of all those features we've been talking about.
Yeah, I think if you're someone like either of us, which are, like, we are heavy users of our smartphones, there are offices, there are social outlets, and they're part of our everyday lives, I suppose, like in so many different scenarios. Like, the other thing is, I was over in York with my baby nephew the other day, and trying to get a photograph of a baby is near impossible, where it's not blurry or there's not hands floating around the place and all the rest. And what I loved about the Pixel was that not only could it offer me the best shot, but you could unblur an image, or, like, there's so much that you can do. And again, you don't need to have a degree in photography to understand how to do it. So overall, I think it's safe to say we are big fans of the Pixel range. The other thing that I wanted to talk to you about is the Pixel Watch. So I suppose the big reason I didn't move from iPhone sooner was because I've always preferred Android, but I loved my Apple Watch in terms of tracking my fitness, my running, all that kind of stuff. And the Pixel Watch 3 has really impressed me, but I do have a little gripe, because it wouldn't be like me not to. But it's the disparity, or my lack of understanding, I suppose, between the Google Fit app and the Google Watch app, and then there's the Fitbit app as well. So you've got kind of three centers for data, and I find myself having to go to all three to get the level of data that I basically need or want based on my running or whatever it might be. And I just wonder, how have you found the watch in terms of a productivity tool, so not having to take your phone out, but then also that fitness tracking element as well?
Well, I'd like to lie to your listeners and say I use it for fitness tracking, but that would just wouldn't, that wouldn't be fair, because it really isn't something. I'm a fan of the Pixel Watch 3 because of the finally went to that 45mm, or just that larger screened display, or larger display, basically, that I can really read more text at once on the screen. When an email or something pops up on my phone, I can read more of it on my watch. And just the functionality of that alone, and just the quality of the screen, the brightness is really impressive. And then the kind of the speed is there, because it's got, you know, it's just all working quite seamlessly in the background. But to your point, I was using it, you know, just in terms of tracking steps and maybe kind of my sleep patterns. It's It was definitely something I got intrigued by and got something out of with the morning brief. You get that every morning, or watch, you'll kind of pop up a little notification saying this is how you slept and this is your kind of your readiness score for taking on the day and kind of take it easy today or kind of push a bit harder, which is what I usually always get for the day ahead. So those type of ways of reading your overall fitness levels and telling you what to do on that given day. Another quality of life, or just a kind of a benefit to the phone and the watch working together to understand you and your fitness levels. But I do agree that there is, you know, they're in that kind of teething problem stage of kind of they bought Fitbit a number of years ago. They're transitioning kind of their devices, the Fitbit devices, into Google's ecosystem. And then the watch then is a Pixel watch powered by Fitbit kind of fitness features. They have kind of come out to say they'll be no longer making those larger displayed fitness or Fitbit devices. I'm not sure exactly where the line will cut, if they'll just stick with the bands. So we're in this kind of awkward transitionary stage. And I do appreciate your annoyances with kind of having to jump into the Fitbit app, having to jump into Google Fit, and then the watch itself and its own settings and kind of tweaks and abilities to change your own features. So they really need to start to amalgamate that more to make it a bit more user-friendly.
Yeah, and I think that will come. But what is exciting for me is that, like, I sometimes I'm a bit of a runner, and so I had gone down the route of having my Apple Watch and then wearing a Whoop. And what's really interesting is that readiness score that you mentioned there, that's a bit akin to what you get from the Whoop. So it does take in a lot of the data, and so rather than just having a Whoop that gives you that readiness score and your recovery and all the rest, to be able to get everything in the one place, I think if they do fine tune the difference between those three apps and amalgamate them into one, it'll definitely be a bit of a game changer. The other phone that we didn't talk about was, of course, the foldable phone. This is something that we didn't get last time round. I remember being on a briefing call with some Irish journalists last year, and we were all a little bit crestfallen to learn that the first foldable device wasn't coming to Ireland, but we do have one now. Have you played around with it, and what are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I was very eager for this kind of new device, this new Pixel folding device, to make its way to Ireland, because, as you said, last year it didn't get it. It was only a limited number of countries that it kind of initially launched in. So now we have the Pixel 9 Pro Fold. So it's all been, as I think we mentioned last time, they've all been launched at once, all under the same kind of 9 moniker or 9 number branding. And yeah, this is kind of the peak of what Google can do with folding technology. And they really have jumped up from what I've seen online, from what the quality and the kind of the engineering and the design choices of last year's model. Now we have the Pixel 9 Pro Fold, and it's leaps and bounds above what they gave customers last year. So it's a really good improvement. And yeah, the cameras are very, very, very impressive. But for me, someone that's a very, very avid photo taker and kind of wants to have the best possible technology in my pocket, there is just one or two too many discrepancies, or kind of what would you call them, tweaks to the Pixel 9 Pro Fold's camera that kind of make it slightly less efficient than the 9 Pro XL's. That's kind of convoluted. It's basically you're not getting all the bells and whistles on the folding device as you are on the standard Pro Fold phones, which is quite annoying. I guess, look at it, physics have a way of telling you how thin a device can go before you have to start to make compromises. So they could only fit so much into one half of a folding phone when it's open, in terms of camera tech. But still, as I said, most people if they do decide are picking this up for the enormous 8-inch display on the inside screen, which is a fantastic display for watching media, for viewing your photos back, for even just reading documents side by side. The productivity aspects, I've used loads, and I want to open two apps at once. It's basically like having two phones together at the same time, so you can really just very quickly check between documents, check between files, watch a video, then take notes on the left hand side. All those type of things that kind of can only be done on a folding device is now something that Pixel line offers Irish customers. But that coming in at €1,919, so there will be many a raised eyebrow at that price point. But it's quite on par with the likes of Samsung's offerings and even Honor's Magic V devices. So these aren't cheap. They're going to come down in price over time, I'd imagine. But right now, they're very, very expensive. But if you're going to use it for the productivity and you feel you need that big display for media, for Excel documents, whatever it may be, the Fold is a fantastic choice.
Yeah, I think that what they're trying to do, as I understand it, is cater to everybody. And like, as much as I've loved using it, I wouldn't buy one. But now I now wouldn't be without the Pixel 9 just because of what it offers me, the camera, the battery, the power, all the rest. But I think the key, my key message anyway, would be if you're buying a Pixel device, you really can't go wrong.
Yeah, that's basically, they've honed it more and more. And I think across the software and even the hardware, because it's such a beautifully designed phone, similar again to almost on the nose of what the iPhones are in terms of design. You know, it's quite hard to tell them apart almost when you're holding them face on between a 16 Pro and a 9 Pro. But look at, if you can't beat, and the quality is there and the craftsmanship, so you're getting a premium made device, and then you've got the power of Google's AI Gemini running underneath, and the camera that just people are pretty blown away by every time you take photos with. So you cannot go wrong with a Pixel device, no matter which way you look at it.
No, absolutely. Look, if you want to read more, you can head over to theeffect.net, where you will find John's reviews in full, as well as the latest news from the world of gaming. John will be back in a few weeks' time with some bits and pieces from the world of gaming. And sure, who knows what else will crop up between now and then. But as always, John Riley, thanks so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thanks a million, Jess.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Before the break, we were chatting to John Riley about the Pixel 9 devices. But as you know, John is our resident gaming nerd here on the show. So if you have any gaming questions for him, or if you're looking for reviews of certain titles, or dare I say Christmas presents, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com, and I will pass those on to John for when he's back with us in a few weeks' time. But on Thursday, Elon Musk showcased the next iteration of public transport, the robo-taxi. Here is just a snippet from the start of that event.
As you can see, I just arrived in the robo-taxi, the cyber cab. And there's 20 more where that came from. So they've been traveling. They're all, there's no people in them, as you can see. The car's just going by with no people. And we have 50 fully autonomous cars here tonight. So you'll see Model Ys and the Cyber Cab, all driverless. You'll be able to take a ride in the Cyber Cab. There's no steering wheel or pedals. So I hope this goes well. I think the cost of autonomous transport will be so low that you can think of it like individualized mass transit. The average cost of a bus per mile for a city, not the ticket price because that is subsidized, but the average price is about $1 a mile. Whereas the cost of cyber cab, we think probably over time, from the operating cost is probably going to be around 20 cents a mile. And price, including taxes and everything else, probably ends up being 30 or 40 cents a mile. So, yes, and you will be able to buy one.
Yeah, that was Elon Musk speaking on Thursday at the robo-taxi event. And while there's no denying that it's cool and it's exciting, I can't quite picture them on Irish roads anytime soon. The rules and regulations around autonomous vehicles are still pretty stringent. But my question to you is, if they were allowed on Irish roads, or if you were in the US where they will be on the roads next year, would you get into one? Would you be comfortable with a driverless taxi that has no steering wheel or no pedals? You're just sitting in it. It kind of reminds me of that episode of Black Mirror. I don't know if you saw, I think it was the second series of Black Mirror, where there was one of those. It looks exactly like the robo-taxi. But would you get into one? Email me, techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, elsewhere, during that event, we also got another look at Optimus, which is Elon Musk's humanoid robot. And here is the update on where we're at with those humanoids.
Everything we've developed for our cars, the batteries, power electronics, the advanced motors, gearboxes, the software, the AI inference computer, it all actually applies to a humanoid robot. So the same techniques. It's just a robot with arms and legs instead of a robot with wheels. And we've made a lot of progress. with Optimus. And as you can see, we started up with someone in a robot suit, sort of dab. And then we've progressed dramatically year after year. So if you extrapolate this, you're really going to have something spectacular, something that anyone could own. So you could have your own personal R2-D2 C-3PO. And I think at scale, this would cost something like, I don't know, $20,000, $30,000. Probably less than a car, is my prediction, long term. Now, it'll take us a minute to get to the long term, but fundamentally, at scale, the Optimus robot, you should be able to buy an Optimus robot for, I think, probably $20,000 to $30,000 long term. So, and what can it do? It'll basically do anything you want. So it can be a teacher, babysit your kids, it can walk your dog, mow your lawn, get the groceries, just be your friend, serve drinks, whatever you can think of. And yeah, it's going to be awesome. And I think this will be the biggest product ever of any kind.
Yeah, I know I give him a hard time, but there's no denying the innovation that he is bringing to life. I guess time will tell if that becomes the norm. I think there are definitely, there's no denying that there are scenarios where they will be super useful. Don't know about teaching kids. Don't know necessarily if I'd want one in my home. But for the service industry, you could see how they would be, helpful alongside the humans. We're already seeing it. I was in Leeds Bradford Airport the other day, and there were those cleaning robots going around the place. Very, non-invasive. They just went around, did their thing, and it was completely fine. The 6-foot humanoid robots, though, do slightly freak me out. There's no face. There's no real expression. They just are giant white robots that walk around the place. But again, Elon Musk is a man that makes things happen. So I expect that we will see them before too long. But yeah, that is it from the Elon Musk corner of Tech Talk. No doubt there will be further updates before long, because sure, when aren't there updates when it comes to Elon Musk? But let's move right along, because International E-Waste Day is taking place on Monday, the 14th of October. And this is where everybody, I suppose, is encouraged to take a moment and assess how much e-waste they have in their home, but also potential opportunities to increase the lifespan of devices in their lives. We know here in Ireland that we have many brilliant players in the refurbished market. There's the likes of Mint Plus, there is Swappy, there's also Refurbed. We've spoken to them on the show previously, but they are continuing to offer more choice to consumers across the device spectrum. And I'm delighted to say that Porrick Power of Refurbed is with me now. Porrick, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks very much for having me, Jess.
I'm delighted to have you on again because, as I said there a second ago, if people have been listening to me on any of the shows here on News Talk, I've been a huge fan of refurbished devices for the last number of years now, because the calibre and the quality of players such as yourselves in the Irish market has gone through the roof. And I think people do have confidence in now buying a device. For those who haven't dabbled in this world yet, can you just explain the difference when it comes to buying a secondhand device from someone like yourselves versus, maybe the unofficial channels, shall we call them?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think you hit the nail on the head there with regards to the terminology. So for us at Refurbed, we would actually say there's three product categories. There's a new device, there's a secondhand device, and then there's a refurbished device. And where we would distinguish between the two, or the I suppose actual distinction between the two of secondhand and refurbished, is a secondhand device is simply just something that someone has had before and they're selling. They might sell it into a business to sell onto you, or they might sell it to you themselves or do it unofficially, as you mentioned, whereas a refurbished device actually goes to an expert who fully refurbishes the device. So it's not just inspection, but it's actually checking every single component, replacing components if needs be, polishing up areas, and then ensuring that the device works exactly like a new product. And they're all certified refurbishers that we work with at Refurbed. And what that means then is that the end product works just like a new one, and the customer can be sure that they're getting something that's top quality.
When we've spoken before, you've outlined just some of the steps that the devices go through to be fully refurbished. Can you just explain and describe the quality of a device that somebody might expect when they are buying a refurbished phone from yourselves?
Yeah, of course. So we have multiple steps, as you mentioned. It all starts with your data erasure, checking each component, making sure that it's up to scratch, replacing, repairing. And then with regards to the quality of the device, the customer should be getting a product that's essentially like new. We do at Refurb have three gradings. So we have like new, we have very good, and we have good. And the reason we have those three gradings are actually just for the external appearance. So if you're getting one that's excellent or like new, it will literally look like a new device. If you're getting one that's very good, there might be a little scratch or two. If you're getting one that's good, there definitely will be a scratch or two. And the reason we have those three areas is, first and foremost, we want to make sure we can refurbish every device, and we don't want one to be, you know, discounted just because of a minor scratch. But then separately, the three pillars also give three different price tiers. So customers, you know, if you're buying potentially for your kids or teenagers, and might drop their device, versus if you're buying for yourself and your partner and you want a really premium product, you can choose which tier bucket suits you.
Yeah, and I think that choice is, like, it's great. And I think it's important that you clarified that it's a lot of the cosmetic stuff. When you're buying a device, as far as I understand it, you do get a warranty. So if it's not performing as it should be, you do have a bit more protection than if you bought from one of those unofficial channels.
Yes, absolutely. So we have a standard 12-month warranty with all of our devices. We also have an option to actually lengthen out the warranty if someone's looking to do so. And outside of that, we give a 30-day free trial with every product as well, just to make sure that everybody's fully comfortable with the product. As you mentioned yourself, I think in Ireland, we've definitely come a long way and we're embracing refurbished tech now, but some people still haven't used it. So we want everyone to know that they do have that cover and that they do have that trial period.
And one of the things that I like about the refurbed offering is that it's not just phones. So I'm on the website here now and we've got phones, tablets, laptops, smartwatches, monitors, audio, kitchen appliances, gaming consoles. How big an undertaking was it to expand beyond just the smartphone market?
Great question. Yeah. So I think a lot of people immediately think of phones when they think of refurbished. And for us, it was a big effort to go into these other areas, but it certainly paid off. So the first area that we went into was phones, quickly then followed by laptops and tablets. And those would be the three areas we're known for the most. But then we were, you know, we looked at the market, we looked at the needs, and we looked at what people use tech wise in their day to day lives. And that's where we kind of mapped out from there and said, how can we move? But it's been a big effort. The consumer electronics side, such as smartwatches, audio, all of that, a little bit easier. Introducing new products then, or new complete streams like kitchen appliances or household devices, was definitely a big undertaking. There's a lot of different expertise that you need to get on board for those devices. But we have a great structure in place and we're really happy to have them. And they seem to be very popular with customers. So we're delighted we've been able to bring them into the fold as well.
Where do you get the devices from? Because I'm just scanning through the Apple Watches here now and I'm seeing, you know, the Notions Apple Watch, the Apple Watch Ultra. I'm seeing the Series 7. I'm seeing some Series 9s. Like, this isn't ancient tech that you're putting a little bow on. This is, you know, pretty modern technology that is much more affordable than buying it straight off the shelf.
Yeah, the supply is really interesting. So we do have different streams. The vast majority of the supply or the products that we get in for refurbishment are actually gotten from businesses. And so I suppose if you think of big businesses, you know, the likes of Stripe or big companies like that, they usually have internal policies where their employees have to switch out their tech every year or two. So whether that's usually the main cohort, laptops, tablets, that kind of aspect in your phones. And then those would be before just gone to e-waste, whereas now they're saved and they're refurbished and they're put available on the market. So the majority of our devices would be from that work kind of stream. Outside of that, then we do get devices from stores as well. So you would have, you know, businesses that have their on show models or different areas like that, which they then don't sell. And again, could have gone to e-waste before, but now would be saved and are refurbished.
And of course, we are talking because of e-waste day. And I think as I said at the top, it's a good opportunity for everyone just to press pause and assess how much, not necessarily e-waste, but unused technology they might have in their homes, whether that is cables, old Kindles, phones, you know, old kettles, whatever it is, lying around. And I think companies like yourselves show and prove that there is more to the lifespan of a device beyond just that one cycle. Do you think that that attitude shift is happening in this country now?
I think it is happening slowly. I think it could definitely, the process could be sped up there, but it is happening. We've seen with We Ireland, who are a fantastic company, they've reported that over the last 5 years, there's been a 100% increase in small electronics with lithium batteries being recycled via them. So that's huge. And that's great. You know, they're doubling what we had before. But then there's also a more harrowing fact, which is that about 84% of households in Ireland have about 15 to 20 small unused electronics in their house. So while things are changing, it's changing at a slower pace. But I do think part of the onus then is on companies like Refurbed. It's also, of course, on the government. But with regards to companies like us, we've recently launched a trade-in offer for smartphones, and it's going beyond just the iPhone. So it's all the different brands. So people know that they can sell their old phone. And yes, it gets that you know, extra life, circular economy, is, which is what our end goal is. But ultimately, people can make money from their old devices then. So it's also that extra incentive of making sure they're not going to e-waste.
Yeah, I'm just on the sell section of the website. So just talk to me a little bit about how smartphones are assessed and what value they possess and how that whole selling process works.
Of course, yeah. So we have all of the different models. So whether you're looking for a Samsung phone, an iPhone, a Huawei phone to sell them, they're all there on the site. So you as a consumer would click in, choose the model that you're looking to sell. And then there's 3 to 4 kind of qualifying questions of what is the storage of the device? Does the device turn on? How does it work, essentially? And once you've gone through the steps and you say, this is, you know, the current standard of the phone, you'll get a quote. Then you get a free shipping label to send that off. Once it's received, it's assessed to say, okay, does this match the description that was given? If so, hey presto, money's in your account. If not, you'll get an email saying, hey, the phone is not exactly as described. However, this would be the value based on blah, blah, blah. And then it's up to the customer if they would like to proceed or if they'd like to get the device back. So we want to make sure that we have of all of the steps, again, we've the customer covered, but that we're still giving an upfront realistic cost to them so that they know, okay, this is likely what I'm going to be able to get for my device.
And in terms of the business of Refurbed, because obviously, as I said there, you've expanded the cohort of products that you offer. Like, is the goal here that everybody moves towards secondhand devices and keeps their devices for longer? And is that not bad for your bottom line if we're all hanging on to phones for that bit longer?
So technically, I suppose the bottom line, you could say yes, but our end goal is that there is a refurbished device in every household in Ireland, but also in Europe as a broader goal. And with regards to that, our mission is that people move towards refurbished tech and that we are enforcing the circular economy and that people are holding onto their devices for longer and the devices are getting a longer life. That's our end goal. And that's why, you know, seeing facts with like We Ireland, where the recycling is going up, is amazing. But what we need people to be doing is stop buying a new phone every year or every second year. We need people to hold on to their tech and give it that longer life to avoid e-waste. I think when you look at it as a singular device and say, okay, someone's now getting a phone every 5 years as opposed to every two, of course, then that would affect our repeat customers. But the positive is we have so many areas, you know, we have some TVs on the site now as well. We have the kitchen appliances, we have sports as well. We even have some e-bikes. So we have such an array and such an assortment that we're not worried about that. We just really want to get more and more refurbished tech in the hands of consumers in Ireland and save them from going to e-waste.
One of the things that I know just from the questions that I get is when people are buying those bigger household items, and in my view, you know, if you're spending more than 100 quid, and it's an investment, right? So if you are buying, as I see here on the website, the Dyson Pure Cool, which is the fan and air purifier, if you're buying one of the steam irons or a TV or whatever it might be, I also see you have Hobbs here as well. People sometimes like to ask questions. Are you getting many sort of customer service questions, or are people doing their research elsewhere and then coming to you guys for the value?
We definitely do get customer service questions, and our team, we have a team who's always available. It's free customer service pre and post purchase. So we do get questions, particularly because people mightn't have bought a refurbished household device before. It does depend on the product itself. So for example, somebody might have a question more so over a hob or a television, because that's also a visual element in the home or in your kitchen, whereas a robot Hoover, not so much. It's usually in the press until you need it to go around and do its thing. So it depends on the product itself, but we do have an expert team there to answer any questions if there are any.
Yeah, well, look, I am blown away by the broad spectrum of the offering here on the website. It's been a while since I've been on it, and it is great to see that there is something for different parts of the household, for different members of your family, whatever it may be. The website again is refurbed.ie. Padraig Power, thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thanks Emil, Jess. I had a great time. Thank you.
Yeah, I would love to know if you have gone down the refurbished route. I know quite a few members of my own family, and indeed some of my friends, have done so and have been really impressed. As I said, it's not just refurbed. There's also Swappy, there's mintplus.ie. There's quite a few players in this market now. And when you just look at the price disparity between a refurbished phone and a new phone, I mean, it's bananas. There's an iPhone 15 for $654.99. Incredible value. But let me know if you have gone down the refurbished route. You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. Right, when we come back here on News Talk, I'll answer your tech questions.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. We're going to dip into the inbox now. So if you have any questions for me, drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. First up this week, we have a question from Mary, who says, I'm traveling to San Fran, New Zealand and Australia. Wow. And would prefer not to have to change SIM cards. I have an iPhone 14. I was wondering if you would have any suggestion, what would be the best service provider to use. At present, I'm a Vodafone user. We will be away from the end of November to the middle of January, spending 19 days in New Zealand and the rest in Sydney, travelling through San Fran 2 days each way. Okay, firstly, I am incredibly jealous. I love Sydney. I was there a few years ago and it is a gorgeous part of the world. In terms of eSIMs, so the best solution I have found is GOMO World. This is an app that you put on your phone. It's just called GOMO World. So go to your app store on your iPhone 14, search for GOMO World, download it, and then you select the countries that you will be going to. So what I'd recommend you do is when you're leaving Ireland and you land in San Francisco, go in, select the US and follow the steps on screen and select, as I said, the US, and you'll get your data there. What that means is your calls will still come to your Irish number, but all of your data will work off the GOMO World SIM. So that's for, you know, your WhatsApp, your Instagram, any your email, anything that you're doing online will come off that. But your calls and texts will still work. It is worth checking with your network, with Vodafone, how much it will cost for you to receive calls and to make calls. But what I'd recommend you do is, if possible, on your iPhone, use either FaceTime or iMessage, or indeed WhatsApp. It's just a much easier way to do it. Then when you get to New Zealand and Australia, do the exact same thing. Open out the GOMO World app, select New Zealand and then select Australia. And you can then select how much data you want for the run. If you use it all up, you can just go in and extend it. But when I went to the US earlier this year, I used GOMO World. I selected, I think it was 15 gigs of data for 7 days, and it was very, very affordable. Like, it cost me less than a tenner. Incredible service. There was no faffing around with SIM cards. It's all eSIMs, and it's very, very easy to set up. So again, it is GOMO World. That is the app. Right, next we have an email here from Kira, who says, my 12-year-old son has a mobile phone, an iPhone 8, and both my husband and I are Samsung, and I'm concerned about security, and I want to put parental control software across both phones, Android and iPhone. I need to be able to access the passcode of the phone at all times. Can you advise of the best controls to do this? So it is possible to put the iPhone, so your son's iPhone 8, into a child mode, so it does require parental controls. You do that at the setup of the phone. So when you're setting it up, it'll ask you if you're setting it up for yourself or for someone else. If you select someone else, it'll ask if it's a child, and then you follow the instructions on screen. That way then it will, that the child will, your son will require your password or PIN to be able to change any of the settings on the phone. He won't be able to override it without your password or PIN. In terms of linking the devices, the best thing I could recommend is that you put Google Family Link in place. So that is very easy to do, and it will just give you eyes on what your son is doing on the phone. You can also put parameters in place to keep him safe online. So I do hope that helps. It is a little bit easier, and it works incredibly well when everybody involved is on iPhone, but there are solutions, so I do hope that works. Next up, we have an email here from Paul, who says, hi Jess, was wanting to get a Samsung or Oppo for around €200 from refurbed.ie with a good camera. Can you recommend any? And is that site good? Thank you, and love the advice you give out. Paul, thank you so much. And yes, refurbed.ie is a great website. We were just talking to Padraig Power before the break about that very site. So I hope you listened to that and you heard it. If you didn't, you can listen back on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. But yeah, in terms of the Samsung phones, there are plenty there that are good value and will serve you well. I'm just back on the website here now and I'm looking. So in terms of a good camera, you've got the S22 5G, which is a great phone still. Beautiful camera, great battery life. And that's €306. So it's slightly above the budget that you'd allocated. I'm scrolling down now to see. There's also the S21 Plus, which is €280. Let's keep going and see if we can find something for you in the €200 bracket. Yeah, the S20, the Samsung S20 FE, the Fan Edition. Again, a gorgeous phone, incredible spec, and it will stand the test of time. These phones are built to last. Not a massive difference in terms of the spec with the more recent iterations. So the Samsung Galaxy S20 FE, it's £191.99 on the refurbed website. So yes, absolutely, go ahead and treat yourself. That's it, I think, from me this week. If you missed any of the show, as I said there, you can listen back on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. I'll be back with Shane and Kira on Monday's Newstalk Breakfast. But in the meantime, have a great weekend.